everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Language Lounge. My name is Michelle Ola, and I'm really excited here to have Mike Farkas with me. And Mike, we're going to talk about something that I think is really interesting. And that is, we're going to talk about restorative circles, right? And we're going to see what you do with that. But what I really liked when we originally talked was that you do these restorative circles in English. And a lot of times we talk about target language and 90%, and we don't often talk about that 10%, right, of when we can use English effectively in our classrooms. And to me, that use of English is always that intentional piece. Like, you're using it not just because it's habit, but that you really decide when you want to use that piece of English in the classroom. And so when we were talking, you were talking about restorative circles, and you mentioned that this is your intentional English use in your classrooms, and then the benefits that has on your students and on your classroom environment for language learning. I just thought that was a great topic. So I'm really excited to talk to you here today about this. And why don't you just kind of give a little introduction of yourself for those that may not know you?
I'd love to, Michelle. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here speaking with you today. My name is Mike Farkas. As you said, I'm a Spanish teacher just south of Boston at a public high school. You know, we have about over 900 students here at our school. We offer a handful of different languages, but like I said, I teach Spanish. I work with students really the whole range of proficiencies, from novice to intermediate to our advanced students in the AP program. So I currently and also have experience working with all proficiency levels, all profiles of language learners.
The whole works. Wonderful. Well, that's a wonderful perspective to have as well. So we're going to jump right into our topic. And when we kind of had our pre-conversation, there was a bunch of different things that we thought about that we could talk about. And I definitely want to have you back in the future. But I thought this one was very both unique and just really interesting to me personally. So I can't wait to learn more. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about restorative circles? Like, what are they? What brought you on this journey of incorporating these into your classroom?
I would love to. So I'll start from the beginning. So I first learned about restorative circles many years ago. There was actually an article and a video on Edutopia one day. I was scrolling through, and there was a school in New Hampshire, actually. I'm from New Hampshire originally, that was being spotlighted, and they were doing this thing called restorative circles or restorative justice. And the purpose for doing it was to handle student discipline for students who had exhibited certain behaviors, had harmed others, came together with other members of the community, meaning not necessarily peers in the same class, but peers maybe from different classes, members of administration, other teachers, to really talk about what had happened and work towards repairing the harm that was done and sort of finding a way to move forward and behave in a way that's more appropriate and more creating more of a safe environment in the school community. So that really like piqued my interest. I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I've never seen this before. But also part of me was like, I don't know, this is different, right? However, fast forward a few years, you know, I started my teaching position here and I was just noticing that there were certain ways of handling student behavior and even like just focusing on classroom management, like the day to day, that were more traditional. You know, we're talking about detentions where mm-hmm. you sit in silence with no phone, conflicts that would arise in the classroom, and those conflicts would be handled more one-on-one with the teacher or maybe one-on-one with an administrator. And there was really like no follow-up. No one ever really talked about like who was harmed. No one really talked about or acknowledged to a very deep level, like, okay, these are the behaviors that were done. They were inappropriate. Look how they affected someone else, right? So I don't know. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking there needs to be something. There needs to be some sort of shift. So I started talking with one of my colleagues next door. She's a very close colleague, wealth of knowledge. And I said, her name's Sarah. I said, Sarah, like, what can I try here? Like any ideas? Like, I'm struggling. And she first told me about collaborative problem solving, which she gave me some resources from Mass General Hospital from a program called Think Kids. And that was really like how I got my feet wet with restorative practices. And basically collaborative problem solving is just questions. You work with a student who has, you know, exhibited an inappropriate behavior, who has caused harm, and you just ask them questions such as, I have my paper right here, my cheat sheet on the sideboard near my desk. So questions like, what happened? How did it happen? What part did you play in this? Who else was affected by what you did? And then thinking about like how were you as the individual who chose to behave in that way? How were you affected? And then thinking, what can you do to make things right? How can you repair the harm? So I started doing a lot of work with that, with students more one-on-one. They would fill out reflections. I do a thing called a 15-minute intervention. We would set goals and action steps. So that was like working really well. And I would use that model to pull kids into the hallway. We'd talk one-on-one. But still, it's like that whole classroom community piece like wasn't quite there yet. But like there was progress being made, which was great. And so our district has really been recently moving in the direction of using restorative practices. I had started learning about restorative practices, though, a year or two before, again, with my colleague, Sarah, who had also learned about them. She had already been doing stuff with restorative practices. So again, went back to Sarah, really picked her brain on that. And we learned about a program, a training program being offered near us in Boston. And originally I was going to do it on my own because I was just so interested and like wanted to learn, like, how can I take this type of work and do it with a full classroom community? And it just so happens that our district, since it's one of our school, our district goals, decided to bring this university in-house and do the trainings for us.
What a great opportunity.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. So I took, there's three tiers of training. I took all three tiers. I was very motivated. And ever since then, I've been utilizing these restorative circles in class.
Fantastic. I think it's so, what have you noticed with your classroom community? Because I know I think when I think of that restorative circle or justice, it's usually kind of that reaction to, you know, behaviors, you know, that happened either as a class or in individuals. But as I was looking around, there's lots of ways you can use these restorative circles, right? So it's not, doesn't just have to be to address, you know, norms and behaviors, although that might be a really great place to start. What are some different ways that you've, you know, incorporated these circles? And also just like, what have you noticed with your students and in your classrooms? And like you said, that classroom community, both in your individual classroom, but even as a school, as you're working through this kind of process and this work together?
Yeah. So the power of the circle, I say, is it's a routine. It's a structure that really brings students together in a community way. So we're all coming together. We are all looking at each other. In my classroom, I have a lot of desks. It's the chairs mounted to the desk. So when a student sits in the desk, their body is kind of obstructed by the desk surface. So we put the desks in a circle, and the students actually will stand in front of the desk or on it. So we are seeing each other right from toe to head. We are looking at each other in the circle. And it really has been a special opportunity just to bring us together as a class and for every single student to hear from one another regarding what they have to say. There's really no reaction in a way. There's no judgment. Everyone gets a chance to speak and share their perspective and lens. So as you said, I've used them to do norm building. We've started the year in all of my classes talking about hopes, fears, and expectations in circle. Utilizing easel paper is really handy to jot down ideas and have students analyze and, you know, notice sort of patterns and trends, and they'll then share those out in circle. As you said, behavior, we've dealt with situations where harm has been done in the classroom environment. Going back to circles, we've even done what we call, in the book that we use during the training is called Circle Forward, Building a Restorative School Community. They talk about doing what's called a temperature check, where we check on how we're doing with adhering to, or maybe not, our classroom norms. And I actually did one recently because a student approached me and said, "Senor, I think we need to do a circle and just check in on our norms." So she advocated for that and I made it happen. But I think circles are also really great just to reflect on how class is going, right? For you as a teacher to gain some feedback on maybe the different activities or tasks you've had your students do. Maybe after a term, I'm actually planning a circle for next week because our first term here is has come to a close. Just checking in on things that are going well, things that are helping us find success in Spanish class, things that maybe we can do better, things that I can do better. I'm finding that doing a circle is more effective for me, and I feel a better use of my time than just doing a Google form. I mean, yeah, a Google form, for example, it's recorded, it's written. I think with a circle, we can do it in the moment, hear from one another, and we can act on whatever is said right there, if need be.
So I've sounds like you have some spontaneous ones, and then you also have some systematic or planned ones that you, like you said, at the end of the semester, at the end of the quarter or unit or whatever. But I hear the word intentional and structure. Like these aren't things that, you know, there's a process or a system or a routine that you and your class have kind of gotten into, it sounds like. So what does that look like as far as how often do you do them? What kind of examples do you have that you know, either spontaneous ones or, you know, planned ones that have really been helpful to building your language community and your students to build relationships with each other and to build relationships with you?
Yeah, great question. So in terms of spontaneous ones, so I've taken a few different circles from the Circle Forward book. For example, if harm is done or if we need to do a temperature check. And I actually have the script to the circle and I have a slideshow with the prompts, like ready to go, on standby. I've got the scripts here on my sideboard near my desk and I've got them saved in a folder because you never know when you'll need to do something with those. Other ones are definitely more intentional, definitely planned. But if, in regards to frequency, it really depends. I think there's a variety of factors. I think whenever students ask for a circle, I think
that's great.
That's number one. That's, you talk about self-advocating. That is incredible. Wow. Sometimes as the teacher, like I'll sense, like, I think we need to have a circle. I think we need to address something that has happened. You might notice maybe students are talking about something. You feel something might be going on. Maybe it doesn't even have to do with the class you're teaching. There's some gossip. And maybe you want to just, okay, guys, let's just come together. Let's just acknowledge what you're talking about. I want some info. I'm sure you all want to hear some info when it's appropriate, right? Sometimes this takes, you know, take the kid aside, maybe who's talking about it, maybe handle it one-on-one. But if it's really affecting the community, really affecting whether or not the class can move forward and progress with learning, that could be an appropriate time to have a circle. And for me, a circle is just like calling awareness to something. Affirming something that is being discussed. So everyone in the room, everyone who's in the community in circle can be privy to what is going on. So for me, like a circle is like communication, like clear communication.
What I love about that is that as teachers, we may communicate with others, like we communicate to our students, but it's typically like that one-way communication, right? Which really just means us talking or lecturing or nagging sometimes or even consoling or celebrating. But a lot of time it just comes from the teacher, right? And so what I've seen or what I'm hearing is that just that fact that everybody is in a circle physically looking at each other and that other people are, you know, they're connecting with each other. It's not you one way connecting with your class or them one way connecting with you. I just think that's the really, really powerful piece of that. How do students How did they originally or initially accept this idea of, you know, what have you seen how, you know, there, you said a student has asked for them before, but how did it start out? Was it smooth? Was it, how did they handle it? How did you, if a teacher's thinking about doing this, what kind of reaction did you first get versus now? What kind of impact did you first see versus what you see now that you use them more regularly?
I'm smiling because in the beginning it was challenging. I had to really sell some kids on it. And they had to just sort of ride it out and sense what it's like. I mean, first of all, for me as a teacher, I mean, I am someone who really values and like really embraces the idea of a student-centered classroom. Like my students have a lot of voice. And so I'm someone who's okay with, I joined the circle as a member of the community and I just kind of let go. And the talking piece goes around. And whoever has it, like, they're going to say what they want to say, right? I mean, if
so, explain that a little bit more. Explain the talking piece a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to. So a big part of the circle is the talking piece. And again, this goes back to your question too, with in the beginning, you have to train the students, well, what is a talking piece? How do you use a talking piece? And what is the purpose of a talking piece? So I don't know if listeners can see, but I have, you can see, Michelle, this is my little avocado.
I'm going to take a screenshot of that so that we can put that on in the show notes. Okay, give me 1 second because that's really fun. Okay, there you go. Great.
So the students named him a few years ago. His name's Señor Aguacate. He is a very important member of our classroom community. He makes sure students are speaking in Spanish. He provides comfort to students. He's a celebrity on social media in our classroom. He's known throughout the school. He has a friend in the chemistry department named Mole. It's a little mole with a lab coat. But anyway, Señor Aguacate is our talking piece. So when I introduce the talking piece, I say to the students, this is Señor Aguacate. He's our talking piece. We love and respect him. When Señor Aguacate is with you, you are the only one who is speaking during the circle. And then I talk about when we pass Señor Aguacate, we can pass him, whoever wants to speak first, right? Señor Aguacate is in the middle of the circle. So whoever wants to start the conversation can go take him. After they speak, they can pass him left and he'll just travel left around the circle, or he can go right. It's really up to the student who initiates. And he just helps make sure everyone is respectful and everyone has a voice and a say during our circle.
That's great. I also love that that's a really fun, playful way to you know, introduce that concept as well of that with your persona, your classroom, you know, your classroom mascot or classroom persona. And so maybe they were less reluctant, I'm thinking, at first to kind of play this? Or did you find that students really were wanting to kind of talk about these things and they just didn't have, you know, a place or a time to do that?
At first, I think that they had never done this before. And I know that in the elementary schools, the middle schools, they are starting to, and they did this in the past year or two. So they've started to make it more of a routine. So the hope is that students coming up to the high school will have some familiarity with how to do circles. We know elementary school teachers, in an informal way, are always doing circles, right? So
yes.
The idea of telling students, okay, we're going to circle up, they know what that is.
Yeah.
But part of training them, like, okay, you can't sit in the chair. You need to either stand in front of the desk or sit on the desk so you can be seen. That took some getting used to. We have to create our agreements before we start doing circles. So sort of our norms, right? What's going to make the circle work. So as a community, it can be a productive circle where no harm is done. We have to come up with our agreements together. And depending on the group, that can either be really quick or it can take a really long time. So with one class, it took a very long time. And they really wanted to pick apart the agreements. And they were getting like really nuanced with them and really thinking deeply about them. And people agreed and then people didn't agree. But you really, as the teacher, you have to stick with it. You really have to honor it. In the beginning, I thought they were just like joking and, you know, they weren't taking it seriously. But in the end, I realized, no, they were really taking it seriously. They were really thinking about it. And so as the teacher, like taking a moment you know, again, me being someone who was relatively new to doing circles myself, I was like, okay, nope, they're taking this seriously. I'm going to ride with this. I'm going to honor the process. I'm just going to let go and it's going to work out. Like, I just had to tell myself that.
How did those students then react when those norms that they created and agreed upon were broken? Were they much less likely to be broken? Were they much less, you know, much more willing to address the issues? Or what did you find? How did you find their behavior after that? Like, as opposed to maybe if I'm a traditional classroom teacher and I might spend a half a class period like us superficially discussing our norms or putting them on the board, or maybe it's just my rules and my expectations, right? And those outcomes are not always great. At least for me, they never were always necessarily what I hope they'd be. So did you find different outcomes when students went through this process themselves?
I did, Michelle. Yeah, because they were part of the process. Like, they were the ones that created the agreements that we need to follow when we're in circle. And because they helped create the agreements, because we voted as a community on the agreements to approve them or not. And when we didn't, we'd have to make revisions. They were much more on board with following the agreements. And also because since they helped create them, they were so much more aware of what the agreements are. They were so much more internalized. And as a result, if a student maybe didn't follow, uphold one of our agreements, I would just say, hey guys, one of our agreements is if you have a talking piece, you're the only one talking. And they follow that. They would reset and refocus, and they would honor that. I do have to say one thing with doing circles is kind of a side note. If someone like me, who recently just started, end of last year, this year I've been doing circles in class. I have much more confidence and experience now, having done so many. But in the beginning, it's always really nice, especially if you have a class where you feel like it might be challenging. You're just starting off with them. They don't know the routine. You definitely have another adult with you. So I would talk with Sarah next door. Last year, one of the classes I did a lot of circles with, she was off that period. Mm. And she would be someone I could send students to if they just continuously violated the agreements, because that means they really can't be in circle. They need to do some resetting work, some processing work to eventually rejoin the circle. I've had our adjustment counselor join the circle as well to take kids out. So people really do, for the most part, follow the agreements, but sometimes they don't. Whatever's going on in their world, they just can't follow them. They're not ready to be in circle. And those kids need that support outside of the circle in order to rejoin and hopefully work towards meeting those agreements.
I love that you have both that Sarah as your support and your, partner in that, and that you're going through this process, as a school. And I'm sure that also adds to the power and the strength to this kind of practice as well. Not that you can't do it by yourself, but I love your point that it takes, sometimes it does need that extra outside person to both help you and the student themselves.
It really does. And even, just Sarah, and I'm thinking of one of our adjustment counselors, Sinead, who I work very closely with here at school. We've all been trained with circles, varying perspectives. We agree in the power of doing this work for sort of practices. And so if I type up a circle script, right, I'll have them look at it. We'll give each other feedback. It's just really nice to know that we have our own community. I mean, there's the three of us, but then there are so many others who have also been trained to do this, and we're working together to help our students then form their communities in their classroom spaces, which is extremely powerful.
I think that's wonderful. So what are so you did have a lot of, like you said, training with that. Is that something that you would definitely recommend, whether it's reading a book or going through something formal? Is this a process that is pretty straight, how do I say this? Just that this is something that you really want to learn, not just like all of a sudden round up all your kids and kind of say, hey, we're going to try this out. So what is that? What is it like a structure of a circle look like for you? I know it's probably different in different circumstances, but is there a certain structure that you use for some sort of let's say it's a check-in one or whatever type of one that you're doing?
Yes, there definitely is a structure. I'm actually pulling one open right now just to give you an example. So the circles follow a certain pattern for sure.
Okay.
Usually when we do a circle, think of it as like a lesson plan. So we'll always start off with, okay, let's form the circle. Let's come together. I'll briefly explain to the class, okay, we're doing a circle for X reason. I'll explain. I'll always tie it back to whatever it is that we're doing in class to make sure it's relevant. And then after I do that, we will do just something in which we review the agreements. So we'll go around, we'll pass the talking piece. Everyone will read one of the agreements just to refresh our memory. And then after we do that, I always do something really light to start us off. For example, the last time I did my temperature check-in with them to check on norms, I put up 9 photos of otters, and I'm like, which otter do you connect with and why, right? Just something really light. I did one time, what food would you eat for the rest of your life, right? And they had some laughs, they had some fun, they started to really get into
it. Relax a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, relax a little bit, right past the talking piece, you know, refresh their memory on that. And then after that, you start to get into the rounds. So you want to think of it as like you start pretty light, then you get like really deep, and then you kind of get light and wrap things up again. Kind of like a lesson plan. You've got your
open.
You've got the content, you know, the main work, and then you've got the wrap up exit ticket, whatever you want to call it, the reflection. So for this particular check-in, we started with round one, again, checking on our norms. And we just talked about like, what is your overall grade for our class on honoring the norms? And like, just tell me like why you chose that grade. So pretty light. So we went around. Round two was we started to get a little bit deeper now, focusing on the norms. So like, can you share the norms that we are doing well on? What makes you feel that way? Then we moved into like, here we go, like the tougher part, right? So like, what do you think might help the class uphold the norms better? So now we're doing problem solving and generating some ideas as a community. And then the fourth and final round was to make a pledge. So every student pledged to try their best to uphold our norms each and every day in Spanish class. And we went around and we did that. And then we just concluded by sharing a highlight from the conversation. And I closed with a quote. So the quote had to do with collaboration and community. So something connected to the purpose of the circle. And for that particular circle, I really wanted it to be quick. That's another thing too, as a teacher, you want to figure out how much time do you want to devote.
Yeah, that was my next question. Like, how long are these? Does everybody have to talk? Like, I have questions. Yes.
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, that one was like 30 minutes. I've had circles last 2 class periods. It really depends on what you want. And I know that the groups I'm working with this year, if you mention, so I tried to make this particular circle really positive. Let's focus on the positives, the good on what we're doing. Because they can really get bogged down with the negative, and that could really spiral and create harm and take us to a really bad place.
Sure.
Not saying like I want to avoid that and pretend that's not happening, but I wanted us to really acknowledge the positives. What can we do to like keep doing the positives? And that allowed for a much more like uplifting circle where the students realize like, hey, we're doing a really good job. There's some room for improvement, but we all agree as a community, like we're doing some really good stuff. And it made for a really productive circle.
Do most of your circles have to do with either classroom management norms or behavioral sort of issues in the class, or what other type of circles either are there or do you kind of focus on?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like the sky's the limit, right? I've done circles before. I'll focus on AP. So I teach AP Spanish Language and Culture. Start of the year, I switched up a little bit. So I usually talk about the format of the AP exam with the students a little bit so they know what they're getting into. This year, my colleague who teaches AP French had the idea of giving students like a practice exam from a previous year just to sort of get the lay of the land, see what they have to do. But I decided to take that into a circle because I wanted to know, like, how are my students just looking at the format feeling about the different parts of the exam to plan my instruction? And so we did a station activity. They visited each of the different sections. they took notes on like how they were feeling going over each part. And I just, we did a circle. I asked them questions like, which part do you feel really confident with? What part like really scares you, like intimidates you? What do we need to do in class to make sure you're ready? And I just listened, like I just took notes. And I got some incredible information from them. So that was one way. Another way is after we take the AP exam, I like to do circles. I did one last year. I'm going to keep doing it because it went well, just to sort of debrief on like, where did you feel confident? Where did you not feel confident? What do I need to know for next year's students to prepare them well? So the students like really, they gave me everything I needed to know. And every single student spoke and offered their perspective. So every voice was heard. Because sometimes I feel, even with Google Forms, with you just come into class, you're like, okay, guys, like, how did you feel, right? People get lost. People aren't speaking. Maybe people don't want to share their opinions. They want to hide how they really feel. For some reason, a circle creates this feeling of trust. When I was being trained on circles, I got with colleagues from across the district who I didn't know. I even had colleagues who are the parents of children that I teach. And we know how that can be sometimes, right? With the parents of our students, like, yeah. Oh, I don't want to say too much, right? But for some reason, just being in this circle, it was like instant. Like I felt like I was trusted. I felt like I could speak openly and from the heart. I could be vulnerable. The more vulnerable, the more trusting, the stronger the relationships, the ties between the students and the teacher, that's going to make for a more productive circle. So part of it too is that relationship building. And when we did that AP circle, especially after the exam, students were very honest. They were very open and vulnerable because over the course of the year, we had built that relationship where we could trust each other and knew that there wasn't going to be judgment. And that made for a really productive, meaningful circle.
I just think that as I'm thinking at first, I was like, well, what would I even circle on with students or what would they circle on? But the more you think about it, it could be just about anything, right? And so yeah. I love that idea of, you know, it's just a great way to get a lot of input and data. But I think what strikes me the most is that having those relationships strengthen, allowing every student to have a voice, right? And experiencing that has to pay off in when you switch to instruction, when you instruct, you know, to that learning part and that part. I would love to hear about, like, how do you feel like that language acquisition piece, that language learning piece has been affected by you adding this to your, you know, your repertoire for your classroom?
It's had a huge impact. It really gives us a moment to just take a pause from the language learning process to do that SEL work and that relationship and community building. Sometimes when we communicate, so I teach my classes predominantly in the target language. AP is 100% in Spanish, but sometimes things can get lost or students can feel like there's a barrier to really expressing how they feel and how they think. And I think through taking a pause with doing circles, whatever type of circle we may do, it gives kids a chance to really feel heard and really express themselves and for us to get to know each other a bit more. And through that comes, like I said earlier, that communication, like really communicating, being transparent around our needs, what we're noticing, how we're feeling. And as a result of having a stronger community and just sort of taking care of different things in circle, I have found that students have a better awareness of what other people are going through, what other people are noticing, maybe a better awareness of like what we as individuals, as a community need to do moving forward to make sure that learning, and I'm referring to, you know, learning comes in many forms, but like learning in the target language, like you said, acquisition, is at the forefront and is able to move forward. And, you know, to go back to your previous question, Michelle, about like how do students first respond, right? I had some classes some students were very resistant to circles. They were like, this isn't Spanish. Like, I want to learn Spanish. But I said to them, in order for us to learn Spanish, you know, we have so many conflicts right now in our community that are not allowing us to move forward. Until we address those and come up with a plan and come together as a group and like settle these differences, we're not going to be able to learn any Spanish. And as an educator, I am not someone who just wants to throw kids out. You know, I want to work with the kid. I want to figure out what's going on, really get to the root of the matter. I want the community to really get to the root of the matter. And so I have to say it's definitely had an impact because I started the year doing circles and now we are just cruising. We are cruising through the content.
Go slow to go fast, right?
yeah, exactly. And you know, some of the issues that we were encountering before, we are not encountering anymore.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been really phenomenal. Like I've really been able to understand now like why when people would say, you know, oh, this work in circle is very powerful, now I see why and I feel why. And I think now my students understand why it's powerful. Because in the beginning, yes, there was resistance from certain students, and now there's more acceptance and students advocating now to do these circles.
I love that. That's great. I think sometimes we forget how vulnerable it is to learn another language. Unlike other content areas, sometimes I feel like when you're trying to communicate and you're trying to communicate in a language you don't know and you don't pronounce it the way it should be all the time, you don't know all the words you want to say, you know, we ask them to not only talk about themselves a lot, we ask them communicate one-on-one with other people that they may not know at all, right, or have any connection to. We ask them to do presentational speaking and present to a whole room full of people that they may not feel safe around, right? Like there's so many things that go on. You know, there's those students that want everything to be perfect and they analyze it in their head and they don't want it to come out. And there's so many things to me in a language class that are going on that affect our abilities to learn language and to acquire that. And that's why I just love this, this idea of course, always we talk about building community, but we don't always approach it in, like you said, a routine or a structural or a systematic way. And so having these circles just seems like a way to really not only make it a priority, but to develop that system or that structure for these conversations to have. I just think that's fantastic.
And to your point too, with, you know, you give some fantastic examples of where students feel really anxious, presenting in front of a class, speaking, right? Messing up words, grammar, right? And as you were saying those examples, Michelle, I was thinking about my intermediate students at the start of the year. When we did our first circle, again, I didn't know these students. They didn't know me. I introduced circles. We talked about hopes, fears, and expectations for the course. I, as a teacher, got so much from my students, you know, and we talked about the importance of pre-assessments and really determining where our students are at. I didn't necessarily need to give them a formal pre-assessment. I mean, yes, I was gauging them in class, like sensing through our work where they were at. But we talked about, you know, what do you fear? And I would take notes as we went around the circle on the chart paper for everyone to see. And they all talked about speaking in front of a class, presentations. So I knew right there, exactly. Okay, they need to work on speaking. They're not quite there yet with speaking. So I'm going to make sure in my lessons, I'm going to target that moving forward. They talked about how their norm was they wanted to make sure people were respectful and kind and supportive of each other when speaking in front of the class. That was the norm that one of my intermediate classes came up with. And we have it on the wall. They've signed it. They want to uphold that norm. And so I just think it's really beautiful how like the students are the ones telling me what they need, what they want. And I wouldn't necessarily have discovered that, I feel, had I not done circles. Because I've done hopes, fears, and expectations for a while now, just as an example to create norms. And the level of detail of input and guidance from my students that I got through circle, I never got through the other ways in which I did it before. So just this year, I was like, wow. I was like, this is incredible. Like, they're telling me exactly what they need and want. And like, I'm going to run with this.
I love that.
In my proficiency lessons.
That's so great. I love that. So what would you say to any teacher that is like, that this is just really intriguing, that this is something, you know, maybe they do community building and they already do some things, but they haven't done this. What is some either advice you'd give, some steps they might take, maybe some resources or anything that any advice that you'd want to give them if they wanted to look into this a little bit more?
I would just start doing some searching online. Just Google restorative circles, restorative practices, and just start noticing what's out there. And I know, Michelle, you did this as well. You were telling me you're doing some researching yourself.
Yeah.
I would say just follow those steps. Just be curious. Maybe watch a few YouTube videos on what circles look like. Circles can take many forms. And like we said, they can be long, they can be short. A circle could be as short, Michelle, as, okay, we're going to go into the hallway and circle up, and everyone's going to tell me in Spanish how you feel today. That could be the circle. We're done. Back into the room. So I think just get some examples. I really do recommend the book. Again, I am not affiliated with the book or getting
well, putting it. That was the first one that I saw when I was doing my research as well. And I've got it in my Amazon cart already. So say the name and author again.
So it's Circle Forward, Building a Restorative School Community by Carolyn Boyce Watson and Kay Pranis. It's fantastic. And what's nice about it is it has circles that are already made.
Nice.
So you can just run with them. And they're categorized by, like, you know, the type of circle you want to do and like why you want to do it. So if you're looking just for some examples to get started, check those out. There are also some online. If you use Google, you can find some examples. And the biggest piece of advice is just make sure you know what you're doing. Have a plan if things, especially if you're doing a circle, maybe a harm circle, something like that, that could get really messy and maybe cause more harm, right? We don't mm-hmm. want that to happen. Definitely have someone else in the school, maybe who's trained with circles or has familiarity or can provide supports to students on standby. They're joining the circle. If you know someone also in the school building who is trained, before I got trained, of course, my colleague Sarah had a lot of background. One of our administrators had gone through all three tiers, so I went to them to sort of pick their brain a little bit and get some ideas. So definitely seek out people who have experience. And the last piece of advice I would give is just do it. Just do it. Start with maybe one that, I don't want to say it's like easier, but like has less risk. Like, okay,
yeah,
let's just
talk about. That's what I was just going to say too. Yeah. Pick something easy at first with an easy class. I loved your celebratory one or a SEL sort of check-in one of some sort or.
Yeah, something like that. Or just like, how'd class go today?
Yeah. Right?
Or, hey, let's go around the room or around the circle and share out something kind that someone did for you today in class or something that someone did to move class forward. Just to get you as the educator used to being in circle and getting the kids used to that routine. And then you can branch out from there and explore some more.
Yeah, to me, that makes a lot of sense. That's great.
And you can
go ahead.
And as I say too, just to add on, Michelle, I know we talked about doing these in English, but you can also do them in the target language. My colleague Sarah has done one before talking about success with her upper level class. Like, what does success look like to kick off the year? So also to listeners out there, don't be afraid to even try these circles in the target language. It could be a great model for class conversation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, one of the hardest things when I was, anytime I get an idea like this, that's not really in our world language sphere, right? It's not really in our pedagogy. It's outside of that, but it's a great idea. I think learning about it and then figuring out a way to connect the two. I think that is the creative part. I think that's the interesting part and the challenging part. And you've given us some really good ideas of what that looks like, whether it's just starting with, like you said, those norms and those behaviors, or even if you're starting with the SEL sort of check-ins or the getting feedback on anything or having them explore, explore an essential question before you get to the unit, maybe, you know, talk about their past experiences, activate their prior knowledge. I just feel like there's a lot of ways that now that we've talked, if I sat down and just wrote a list, like of all the either info that we could gather or share, or, you know, what are the things that we want to kind of work on as a class? I just think this is a really powerful way to get started with that. And so I really have enjoyed talking with you about this. I've known this word. I've kind of had this vague understanding of it. But after speaking, I just think it really, I can so see the value of doing this with our language learners in particular, where there are a lot of anxieties and fears and that effective filter that kicks in and the vulnerability that's needed and some of the topics with comparing and contrasting and interculturality and, cultural stereotypes. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of things that we could, you know, that you could unpack as a teacher with learners.
I agree a ton. And like I said, I mean what I say, the sky is the limit. You could do so much with this and shape it really however you want, but make sure when you shape it, you keep it in a circle. That's the biggest.
Yes. I have heard, that's so funny because that is one of the first things that I've seen over and over again, that it is really important that you are physically in a circle, you know, that it's not and standing or not having those barriers between you. So I think that's fantastic. Well, Mike, are you on X, on Facebook, on Instagram? Are there any ways that people, if they're curious and wanted to reach out and chat with you about how you use, you know, these restorative practices in your classroom or in a world language classroom, you'd be willing to connect with them? Can you give us how they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I would love to help support anyone who is willing to give this a shot. I am on X. My X handle is Mike, so it's my first name. _ and then Farkas, Farkas.
Wonderful. That's awesome. I'll tell you, people, this is how I get all my guests. I just stalk them on Twitter and then I'm just brave and I message them or I tag them and say, hey, let's talk about this. So Mike is a fantastic person that I just got to meet through this and had this wonderful conversation. And I encourage everyone to reach out to him if you have some ideas or questions. Awesome. Well, thank you, Mike, so much for joining me today. And we're going to put some of that information that you shared in the show notes for people. And thank you so much.
Oh, Michelle, thank you. It was such a pleasure talking with you. And thank you so much for having me here. It was great. And I hope that together we can motivate other teachers to try implementing some of these restorative practices if they haven't already, or if they are, to keep doing it and keep motivating others to use them out in their classroom.
Wonderful.
It's very, very important these days.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot going on that really this is essential. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Michelle.